Min Hametzar from the Narrow Place, GJC Passover Supplement, 5781, 2021, read by Judy Sessholtz.
Bechol dor vador hayav adam lirot et asmo ki'ilo hu yatsa mi Mitzrayim. Each spring, we return to the story and ritual of Passover. No matter how hectic or challenging the past year, we ground ourselves in the story of our ancestors' journey from slavery to freedom, a story that is not only theirs, but also our own. Reliving their suffering, their departure, their movement, their weariness, and their insistence on survival inspires us as we journey in our day. The story of Passover is not an individual one. It is a story of a people, a collective. And the story of Passover calls on us to make freedom possible for each and every being on earth. Like our ancestors, we cannot make this journey alone. Together, we feel freedom calling. Together, we leave behind that which has constricted our hearts. Together, we part the waters and trust there will be dry land on the other side. Together, we dance. And together we keep moving through the unknown of the wilderness toward all that is yet to be. Along the way, we pause to acknowledge and praise just how far we have come. This first Germantown Jewish Center Passover supplement comes out of a moment of great narrowness and unknown. Members of our community offer these words, teachings, insights, images, and inspiring questions during a pandemic that has kept us inside, physically distant from each other, and unsure of how the world would feel in the future. Without knowing what the other side of the great waters would bring, we have done what our people have done for centuries. We turn to Torah and to each other, sharing our ideas to bring us all comfort and wisdom. May the words offered here and those repeated at our many and varied seders provide us with an account of the past, a reckoning with the present, and a blueprint for the future. We praise the source of life that brings our hands and hearts together as we continue the journey. Rabbi Adam Zeff, Rabbi Rebecca Richman. Betty Kopp, Chometz. Clean the house and bless the removal of leaven. From Rabbi Freddie Cooper. In Mishmar Moed 1:2, we learn, they need not fear lest a weasel or a mole may have dragged it from one house to another, or from one place to another. Because if this was so, it would occur from courtyard to courtyard and from town to town, and there would be no end to the matter. So I bring this teaching to reflect on why I do the things I do to ready myself and my family for Pesach. First, I must take you back many years. My older daughter had been going to Hebrew school for a year when she was 6 years old. One Sunday night after Purim, she came home with a new kit that they had been given and taught about at Hebrew school. The kit consisted of a feather, a spoon, and a candle. Julie was very excited about what she had learned that day and was anxious to teach me about the kit that was in her hand. She explained, Mommy, after we clean everything for Pesach, we ought to do this ceremony the night before and we ought to say these blessings. This is the manner that we can be sure we have done everything that is needed to prepare the house for Pesach. Julie was so excited to be able to tell me about the need for this ceremony and the ins and outs for how to do it. And I promised her that that Pesach, we would try to do it just as she had learned. So this is where it all began. I hid the 10 pieces of chametz around the house, and at nightfall we lit the candle. Then my husband and two daughters went by candlelight to find the chametz that was hidden and place it in a container with the spoon and the feather. We said the blessings that night that said we had collected all of the remaining chametz on our property, and in the morning, we burned the chametz with care and said the final blessing. we knew we were truly ready for Pesach. As a mother, I learned to do the ceremony from my six-year-old daughter, and because she was my teacher, it stuck for all of us. We have continued this custom as part of our family preparation every year. Last year, in the midst of learning about a pandemic, it was just my husband and myself that were home for Pesach. I was not sure what parts of Pesach and its preparation I had the heart to complete. It was such a time of confusion. But the candle, the feather, and the wooden spoon came out just on schedule, and somehow it was necessary for us to know that Pesach was upon us to still do this ritual. It was just the two of us, but we each knew our roles. I hid the chametz, and my husband found it. All of the blessings were said, the chametz was burned, and right on schedule, we found ourselves ready to welcome in Pesach. So I learned that there would be no end to this matter. It still was a crucial part of welcoming Pesach for each member of the family, even if we could not be together. Ritual has the power to take our hearts where we need to travel to greet a holiday. It brings with it all of our memories of every Pesach right to the moment that we are inhabiting. This year too, whether we will all be together or not, I know that the candle and the feather and the spoon will help us to welcome Pesach. Those steps together in the dark allow all of us to know we have arrived. From Charlie Miller. Betikach Chometz is more than a clearing out of spoiled grain products. It is an act of faith in the future. Chometz does not become treif because it is inedible or lacks nourishment. Consider rather that chometz is emblematic of the fortunes of the previous year. In earlier times, emptying your home of these products would have been a statement of optimism that all future needs would be reliably provided for in the new agricultural year. The appearance of the matzah during the Seder represents the last of the grain produced during the previous year and watched so that there would be enough left for one last meal. From this point on, our ancestors would be sustained by the fruits of the new harvest. What will be the new harvest in my life? And how will I nurture it to fruition? With that spirit, I now set upon the task to symbolically set aside my preoccupations with events of the past and embrace engagements with the possibilities ahead. From Lori Lefkowitz and Rabbi Lenny Gordon. We are accounting people, limnot yamenu. We count the days to make them count, just as we count the omer of the barley harvest, the days between leaving Egypt and receiving Torah, between Passover and Shavuot. So too, for many generations, women in particular have counted the days between Purim, when we begin cleaning and preparing for Pesach, and tonight, when we declare our cleaning complete with the ritual of Betikach Chometz. For these last weeks, we have been in anticipatory time, preparing for the exodus that we will undertake at the Seder. In the story of this season, the great miracle of freedom is anticipated by acts of women's heroism. The midwives, Shifra and Puah, who defiantly saved babies, Yochaved and Miriam, Moses' mother and sister, enslaved women who saved the liberator as an infant by setting a basket floating on the Nile, and the Egyptian princess, Pharaoh's daughter, who raised Moses as her son. As we discard the last crumbs of our own puffery and enslavements in this cleansing ritual and ready ourselves for the main event of Passover, the Seders, let us pause to be grateful for everyone whose quiet courage, whose commitment to sustaining life, whose solidarity across boundaries of class, age, race, and nationality make the miracle of freedom possible. We have counted the days and labored to reach this transition. As we gather and discard our last crumbs, we pray that this spring festival renews us in our common purpose to value and sustain each and every life. Hadlakat Nerot, light the candles. From Chava Weisler, Chayna for Passover, after lighting candles. Machzor Mishle Yehuda, translated by Chava Weisler. Introduction. The following prayer is of Tzachina, one of the devotions in Yiddish recited by Central and Eastern European Jewish women, beginning in the 16th century. Collections of Tzachinas were published, but these prayers also appear as additions to prayer books and other devotional works. The prayer translated below is found in a Machzor, a special festival prayer book for Passover. As in many Tzachinas, this text has the place for the woman to address God as herself, in her own name, and as the daughter of her mother. One thing I love about this prayer is that it recognizes the tremendous effort and expense involved in preparing for Passover. Also, the text relates many aspects of Passover preparations to wider themes. Eating matzah, for example, is connected to the hope to be saved from hunger throughout the year. One feature of this text, typical of many later tekinas, is the interplay between Hebrew and Yiddish. Each short paragraph begins with a sentence in Hebrew, often echoing phrases from the Tanakh or the prayer book, and continues with an expansion and interpretation of the Hebrew in Yiddish. The Hebrew is in bold type in this book, while the Yiddish is in regular type. The Tekina is to be recited on the first and second nights of Passover, after kindling the lights. You are the Lord God who creates heaven and earth. You are God, the God who has created the high heavens and the earth with all the creatures found therein. From your holy dwelling place, listen to my outpouring of prayer. Accept from your holy dwelling place the prayer I am about to make, and incline your ears to hear the words that come out of my mouth. For you perform miracles for us at every moment. For you, God, work wonders and miracles for us at every moment. Therefore, work wonders for me as well, accepting my words, although I know I am not worthy of it. You brought us forth from Egypt to be your beloved people. You took us out of Egypt and brought great plagues and blows upon the Egyptians, and you chose us to be your beloved people. Therefore, I beseech you that our plea may be sweet to you. Therefore, I beseech you, compassionate God, that the prayers and petitions that we pray for your holy revered name's sake be sweet for you. And upon me, your handmaid who knocks at the gates of compassion, may your mercies stir. And upon me, my name, your handmaid, daughter of so-and-son, your handmaid, who now comes knocking at the gates of mercy, may your mercy stir, that you may have compassion upon me and upon my husband and upon my children. May you remove from among all us all severe and wicked decrees. May you clean out from upon us and from upon all your dear people Israel all that is bad, just as we have cleaned all the leavened foods, chametz, out of our houses as you commanded us. And may no illness or injury come upon us. And just as you protected your children, the people of Israel, from the plagues you brought upon the Egyptians, so may you protect us from all illness and plague. And by the merit of our eating unleavened bread, may you protect us from the bread of affliction. And by the merit of our keeping your holy commandment to eat unleavened bread for the entire festival, for matzah is called bread of poverty, may you protect us for our entire lives from poverty and hunger. Look down from the heavens and see the toil of your people. Lord of the universe, look down from heaven and see how much work and effort your dear children, the people of Israel, put out to honor the Passover holiday and how much money they spend for the sake of the holy festival. They strive with all their might to fulfill your commandments. They toil with all their substance to observe the commandment you have commanded them, to remove completely all leaven from their houses, and to eat unleavened bread for all 7 days. May you, O Lord, have compassion for our toil. And we pray you, merciful God, that you may have compassion upon our exhaustion, and that you may send us an abundance of blessing and success, so that we will earn again the replacement value of what this Passover cost us. Remember the merit of your tribes who entered the Sea of Reeds. Dear God, remember to our credit the merit of the hosts of your people Israel, who themselves entered into the depths of the sea and had faith in you that you would save them so that they would not drown. And preserve us from drowning in the depths of the sea. And preserve us and our children from drowning, God forbid, in the depths of the water. And may the rivers not dry up during the entire coming summer. And help us, dear God, that there may be rain at the proper time, so that the water in the rivers may not be diminished in the heat of the coming summer, and that water may not become expensive. Please accept with favor my blessing over the candles. I pray you, dear God, merciful God, that you may accept with goodwill the blessing I have made over the candles which I kindled in honor of the holy festival. And may you enlighten the eyes of my husband and my children in your holy Torah. And may you enlighten the eyes of my husband and my children in your holy Torah by the merit of my lighting my home with the candles for the festival. And cause light to shine in the darkness of Jerusalem and the temple. And may you cause light to shine in the darkness of Jerusalem and of the temple, which have been dark now for a very long time. And may we bring the paschal sacrifice to the fire on the altar. And may we be worthy to sacrifice the paschal lamb upon the fire of the altar. Speedily in our days. Amen and amen. So may it be God's will. Followed by artwork by Yona Diamond Dansky. Hadlakotner wrote, from Rabbi Arthur Waskow, Between the Fires, an invocation for kindling candles of commitment. We are the generations that stand between the fires. Behind us, the burning crosses lit by hate to choke our people in the smoke of terror. Behind us, the flame and smoke that rose from Auschwitz and from Hiroshima. Not yet behind us, the burning forests of the Amazon, torched for the sake of fast hamburger and fast wealth. Not yet behind us, the glare of gunfire exploding in our children. Not yet behind us, the hottest years of human history that bring upon us melted ice fields, flooded cities, scorching droughts, murderous wildfires. Before us, we among all life forms face the nightmare of a flood of fire, the heat and smoke that could consume all earth. Here, the day is coming, said the prophet Malachi, that will flame like a furnace, says the infinite interbreath of life. Yet for all who revere my interbreathing name, a sun of justice will arise with healing in its beating of its wings, its rays, its winds. Here, before the coming of the great and awesome day of Yahweh, the breath of life, I will send you the prophet Elijah to turn the hearts of elders to their youth and the hearts of the youth to their elders, lest I come and smite the earth with utter desolation. Here, we ourselves are coming before that great and terrible day of smiting earth. For we ourselves shall turn the hearts of elders and youth to each other, so that this day of smiting does not fall upon us. We ourselves are coming to douse that outer, all-consuming fire. We must light again in our own hearts the inner fire of love and liberation that burned in the burning bush, the fire that did not consume the bush it burned in. For love is strong as death. Love's fire must never be extinguished. The fire in the heart of all creation. It is our task to make from inner fire not an all-consuming blaze, but the loving light in which we see more clearly the rainbow covenant glowing in the many-colored faces of all life. Kadesh, pour the first cup of wine and say a blessing. From Rabbi George Stern, reflecting on gathering. In Exodus 12, 3-4, we read, "Speak to the whole community of Israel and say that on the 10th of this month, each of them shall take a lamb to the family, a lamb to a household. But if the household is too small for a lamb, let him share one with a neighbor." Today, for most Jews, the Seder is a time for building camaraderie and community with family and friends. If you have previously done a Zoom Seder, how did that work for you? Who joined and who wouldn't normally be with you? What do you remember from their virtual presence that brought a smile to your face? Who was missing? How did that feel? Were you able to appreciate the intimacy of the smaller gathering? This past fall, we couldn't invite many people to our Sukkot, even though they were outdoors. Imagine that your Seder table is in a sukkah. With whom would you like to share your lamb? Family, friends, people from the past, tonight? What would you like to say to them? What are you doing to ensure that next year we'll be able to gather in person? From Rabbi David Teutsch. While having four cups of wine at the Seder is often ascribed to the four biblical promises of redemption, the four cups also serve important individual functions at the Seder. The first cup is said over Kiddush, sanctifying the Seder as a remembrance of the going forth from Egypt, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. The root of going forth, Yud, Sadi, Aleph, is the same root as in Motzi, as in brings forth bread. Redemption is not something that happened only once long ago. It is with us still. The second cup comes after the account of the Exodus in the Seder. It celebrates redemption during the first Pesach in Egypt, Pesach Mishvayim. The third cup marks the meal, the concrete celebration of the Pesach of the present. It is associated with the redemptive power of the food of the meal and stands in for all of the Passovers after the first throughout history, Pesach Dorot, literally Passover of the generations. The last cup is associated with the final redemption, the cup of Elijah, and Messianic days, Pesach Le'atid, the future of Passover. Thus, the cups demarcate the major divisions of the Seder, the redemption from Egypt we remember, the redemptive experiences we have every day, and the redemption we hope for in the future. Memory helps us interpret the present and shapes our efforts to bring an optimal future. Artwork below by Penina Hoffman. Ur Chatz, wash hands without blessing. From Rabbi Daniel Stillman. Muslims ritually wash their hands and other parts of their bodies before they pray. If Kaddish signals that we have begun a sacred meal, perhaps the act of washing during Ur Chatz signals that we have begun a prayer. Take this moment of washing to set an intention for yourself during this Seder. Where do you want to direct your attention this year? On experiencing the ritual foods? on lively discussion of the story, on your Seder companions. What will be the thread of prayer that runs through the Seder for you? Artwork below by Leslie Ponce. From Rabbi Dale Friedman. As the Seder begins, our hand washing is unadorned, done for us by our leader, lacking even a bracha. But the simple act of covering hands with water reminds us of the water that lay before our people at the shores of the Red Sea. At the very moment that Pharaoh's legions were at their backs, our ancestors were paralyzed. They could not return to Egypt, nor could they imagine a way forward as the sea loomed endlessly before them. It was Nachson, the son of Amminadab, who did the simplest, most powerful thing imaginable. He took a step, a single step into the water. The rabbis teach that it was only once his foot touched the waters that they parted and a ribbon of dry land appeared. There is a teaching that when you are overwhelmed and cannot envisage a way forward, it may be too much to pray that God will show you the way from where you are to where you will end up. What you can pray for, rather, is that God will light the next step and then the one after that. As long as we long to leave behind our Mitzrayim, may we be guided step by step to liberation and possibility. Kapas, dip a vegetable in salt water and eat. From Miriam Pinska von Essen. Spring is here. In my undergraduate forest ecology class, my classmates and I set out every week to explore the forests of central New York. Every type of tree, our professor explained, possessed a different life strategy to survive and thrive. What tree are you like? He would challenge us to consider. Are you aspen, eager to experience the sun's light, allocating your carbon to quickly propel skyward, yet vulnerable to upending? Or are you perhaps sugar maple, sometimes lingering mere inches tall for years, rooted on a shaded slope, patiently waiting for a sun-filled opening in the forest canopy? Trees grow and adapt in myriad ways, yet they all begin the same, as saplings, their bright green leaflets not dissimilar to the parsley we place on the Seder plate. Though not without past struggles and future challenges, they represent potential. What approach will you take to growing this spring? Artwork below by Allison Poplis. From Jeannie Ravital. One of the gifts of our lockdown time in the spring of 2020 was the gift of slowing down, way down. On my daily morning walk in Carpenter Woods with Shanti, our beagle, I stopped to take a photo in the same spot every morning for 3 months. I got to document the miracle of the woods emerging from the hibernation of winter, going through the budding of spring, and then bursting into the abundant green of summer. On our walks, I often chanted, Hey, Hey Ta, Hey Haveh, V'tihiyeh. God was, God is, God will be. It was an amazing reminder that, despite all the suffering of humanity in these times, Earth God is continuing her magic of rebirthing into another cycle of life. May our corpus tonight remind us of the steadfast miracle of spring, and motivate us to wake up to protect the future of humanity and the diversity of life on Earth. Yachatz. Break the middle of three matzot. Wrap the larger portion in a napkin and hide for the afikomen. Dessert. From Rabbi Josh Gutoff. During the course of the Seder, we're sometimes cast as slaves, looking forward to freedom and sometimes as a liberated people looking back on the Exodus. This passage speaks to both these roles and raises some interesting questions. This is the poor bread. Here the matzah is described as slave food, but later on in the evening, quote, this matzah that we eat, what is the meaning of it? Unquote. The matzah will be described as liberation food, the bread made by the newly freed Israelites. Are they two different opinions, two different kinds of matzah? Or has something happened? All who are hungry, we would expect an invitation to come from the free, the wealthy, from those who have plenty. Here, though, it seems that we are still eating poor bread. We are still enslaved, and yet we are opening our doors. What might that say about the poor and the rich? All who are in need. At first, this seems to be a repetition of the previous line for rhetorical effect, and hungry and needy refer to the same people. But perhaps we should read it as, if you are oppressed, impoverished, and hungry, come, and we will provide for you. And if you are free and powerful, you also need some Pesach in your life, and we offer that too. But why? What is it that those who are free and comfortable, those with privilege, need from the Seder? What is the Pesach of the empowered? From Rabbi Sheila Peltz Weinberg, Meditation on the Inner Pharaoh. Pharaoh is the all-powerful, godlike master of the empire. The story of liberation is about seeing through and beyond Pharaoh's authority and control. In meditation, we are looking inside our own hearts. There we may encounter the inner Pharaoh as the thought patterns and impulses that urge us to seek complete control, total approval, utter security, perfect relationships. Meditation itself is an exploration of the taste of liberation and the forces that impede that freedom. You are invited to take a seat. Let your back be upright and plant your feet on the floor. Take a few deep breaths into the nose and out the mouth, allowing the surface tension to release. Notice any physical sensations that appear in this moment, any place of constriction or pressure. Notice places of heat or warmth of coolness as they appear in the body. You are using the faculty or tool of awareness to simply notice what is present in bodily sensation. You can allow your eyes to softly close, or you can allow them to soften and gaze a few feet ahead of you toward the ground. Bring your attention to the sensation of air entering and leaving your body. There is no need to breathe in any particular way. Just notice the sensation of the breath entering the body and then leaving the body. You are not actively doing anything other than observing, noting, becoming aware of the flow of breath. You can note softly to yourself, in breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. Continue with a few more breaths for a few minutes on your own. You might become aware of other sensations in the body besides the breath. A breeze from the outside, an ache or pain in the legs or arms or other part of the body. You might notice sounds coming and going. This is fine. Just let your attention return again and again to the breath if you become involved in some other object. There is nothing that is supposed to arise or not arise. You are not supposed to feel or think or not feel or not think in any particular way. Just notice what is really happening, without judging it, without running away, without pushing it away. Observing your entire felt experience, sounds, sensations, and thoughts. See if there is anything permanent and unchanging in your experience. Observe any desire that might be arising within you to make your experience something solid or familiar or known or right. Notice if you have any discomfort around being with your own experience without knowing what it is or what to do. It is human to have difficulty resting in this moment of awareness without trying to make it into something else or push it away. Our inner Pharaoh tells us we could get everything to be under control if we tried hard enough. In contrast, God's message highlights process, relationship, listening, vulnerability, and faith. As we sit, we continue to be aware of the fluid nature of our experience, thoughts, sensations, sounds, arising and passing. Only awareness itself is continuous. Our awareness is steady, faithful, even malleable, conforming itself to whatever meets its gaze. It is infinite and spacious. Our awareness sustains us. What inner Pharaoh blocks your freedom, your inner light, your life force? Can you rest in warm, spacious, open, accepting awareness itself? From Rabbi Moshe Friedman. Yachatz, the breaking of the middle of the three matzot on the Seder plate, is a unique food-based ritual, as it is not accompanied by a blessing. When we think of Yachatz, we often focus on the utilitarian nature of the act, that the larger of the two broken pieces will be hidden, searched for, and once found will serve as the afikomen, the dessert signaling that the Seder is moving toward its conclusion. But while we are often tempted to put dessert first, of equal importance is the fact that the silent performance of the breaking of the matzah affords us a moment of inward reflection in what is otherwise a long ceremony of many words. Perhaps we might give ourselves permission to honor the uneven texture of our personal and communal lives and our own places of vulnerability, just as our Yachatz ritual elevates brokenness to a place of honor in the Seder. Magid, pour the second cup of wine and tell the story of fleeing slavery in Egypt. From Rabbi Arthur Waskow. Four new questions for Passover. Why do we break the matzah in two before we eat it? Matzah, the pressed down bread that embodies the, quote, fierce urgency of now, unquote, was both the bread of the oppressed and the bread of freedom. If we keep the whole matzah for ourselves, it remains the bread of affliction. Only if we share the matzah can it become the bread of freedom. We must break the matzah in two in order to share it with each other. If we hold all our abundance, our prosperity, for ourselves, the withholding brings forth anger and resentment, guilt and fear. The abundant bread becomes the bread of affliction. Only if we share our abundance with each other can it become the bread of freedom. If we gobble all the abundance of our Mother Earth for human society alone, leaving no space for other life forms, the earth will choke and curdle. Whatever bread may barely grow will bear affliction. Only if we share our air, our water, with the myriad shapes of life, will all this growing birth our freedom. If we hold our own knowledge, our own wisdom, for ourselves alone, we end up in a narrowness that enslaves us. Only if we share our wisdom with other traditions, other communities, and open ourselves to learn from them, can our wisdom lead to freedom. Mitzrayim, the Hebrew word for Egypt, actually means tight and narrow place. If we try to hold the whole world for ourselves, even the land of Israel, the land will remain a land of affliction. Only if we share it with another people can it become the land of freedom. And so at the beginning of the Seder, we break the matzah. And at the end of the Seder, we share its pieces with each other to eat the bread of freedom. Question number two, why is there an orange on the Seder plate? Of all the foods upon the Seder plate, only the orange bears the seeds that can grow the next generation of our freedom. The orange first came to us as the newly fruitful gift of those who had been treated as outsiders to our community. Lesbians and gay men, Jews by choice, women, the blind, and those whose minds or tongues were stammering. All of these have sown the seeds of creativity. If these seeds flower, they will sow new generations of the unexpected. Three, why is there charoset on the Seder plate, and why do we linger on its delicious taste? Because charoset embodies the delicious Song of Songs, which itself celebrates the embodiment of love among human beings and love between the earth and human earthlings. All the many recipes for charoset draw on the ingredients named only in the cookbook of the Song of Songs: wine, nuts, fruit, spices. We are taught to recite the Song of Songs during Passover in order to remind us that the joy of freedom cannot be celebrated in human societies alone. As in the time of Eden, all earth must sing for joy. Because in Eden, the Garden of Delight, we humans tried to gobble all the fruitfulness of earth. Eden ended with an earth turned stingy and with half the human race subjugated to the other half. Passover calls us to Eden once again, where love and freedom join in fuller celebration. These are three questions. What is the fourth question? That is the fourth question. From Rabbi Howard Avrum Addison. Ashir Golanu, claiming Judaism anew. It's standard Jewish practice to recite a bracha before performing a mitzvah. Therefore, it seems strange that among the blessings preceding each Seder ritual, we find no bracha before the Magid. After all, it fulfills a prime mitzvah of Pesach, the Torah's imperative of V'higat ta, you shall tell your children. The Chatam Sofer offered a dual explanation for this anomaly. First, the Baruch Asher Golanu, who has redeemed us, after the telling and before blessing the second cup, is actually the blessing for the Magid. And why after, not before? Because this delayed practice is akin to the threefold mikvah immersion, when one becomes a Jew by choice. The first immersion ritually marks formal entry into the Jewish people. Only then can one appropriately say, who has sanctified us through the mitzvot and charged us, before completing the second and third immersions. In effect, the Chatam Sofer teaches that at our annual Seder, we are all Jews by choice. By choosing to immerse ourselves anew in our tradition's story of enslavement and redemption, and by physically ingesting its edible symbols, we reclaim the right to bless Yahweh, our God, and God of our forebears. And it is only by internalizing the realities of oppression and possibilities for deliverance in our life and times that we receive again, as Jews, the imperative to actualize those blessings in the world. Artwork below by Rabbi Beck Richmond. From Maria Pulzetti, asking the four questions if children are not present. If we are not holding a multi-generational Seder, and even if we are having a Seder alone, we still ask the four questions. If no children are at the Seder, the adults ask the questions. If one is alone, one asks oneself, why is this night different? Mishnah Torah, leavened and unleavened bread, 7:3. Asking the four questions ourselves is, as Rabbi Michael Strassfeld teaches, an opportunity to locate each of the questioning children in ourselves. In the past year, we have found ourselves asking questions like the four children of the Seder. Sometimes, like the wise child, we want to understand. Sometimes, like the simple child, we need the flood of information to slow down. Sometimes we can't imagine the next question. And sometimes, like the wicked child, we question authority and declare it does not apply to us. How does asking questions with these different approaches help to bring out the whole story? Which child do you find in yourself right now? Artwork below by Nina Gordon and Sonia Gordon-Walinsky. From Wendy Horowitz. Magid is translated as narrate, the imperative to tell the Exodus story, and it is the central task of our Seder. Magid also means one who tells, and refers to the wandering preachers who offered not only Torah stories, but also interpretations. This, too, is our task. In the Haggadah, the story is chopped up and mixed like choroseth. It loops back and begins again. We interrupt with two dips, four questions, four children, five cups of wine, 10 plagues, 15 holy attributes, and a goat. As children, we just wanted to know what happened. So many digressions. Even as adults, we yearn for neat narratives. But Magid should puzzle us, challenging us to actively reconstruct the story. Each year, we are all Magidim. Medieval rabbis began in two ways. First, with physical enslavement, Avadim Hayinu, we were once slaves. And second, with spiritual, our ancestors were idol worshippers. And a third beginning, Arami Oved Avi, variously translated as, the Aramean wanted to destroy my father, but he went down to Egypt. My father was a wandering Aramean. And even, my father was a fugitive Aramean. So, who was this? And Oved, lost, causing to be lost, destroyed, unclear. But such debates enrich the tale. The telling is never stale. Some years, Choroset seems less sweet, maror more bitter. Yet we consume the story again, viscerally realizing its meaning for our time. The sensory complicated process of Magid ensures that we remember the past and seek justice in the present. From Liz Bloch-Smith, an alternative four questions to explore the importance and message of Pesach. One, why is Pesach the only holiday with special dietary requirements, laws pertaining to chametz? Two, why on Pesach do we reenact the events of the narrative through matzah, choroseth and mortar, the roasted bone on the Seder plate representing the Pesach offering? Some Sephardic Jews dress in traveling clothes for the Seder. Three, why is Pesach the only holiday for which we are commanded to tell the story to our children? Exodus 13:8. And on that day, you shall tell your child, it is because of what the Lord did for me when I went free from Egypt. Four, why is the Passover Seder the most celebrated ritual among Jews? Artwork below by Leslie Ponce. Rochsa, wash hands with blessing. Artwork by Sonia Gordon-Walinsky. Artwork by Rabbi Beck Richman. Artwork by Sheila Erlbaum. From Sheila Erlbaum. This is a huge series of waterfalls over rocks and shrubs on a mountainside, done with charcoal vines and a Q-tip smudger. What does it teach us? One who sows in tears shall reap with joy, Psalms 126:5. As we journey through life, there will be tears to shed as we come crashing over rocks and rough shrubs. But there is also great power and beauty in the journey, and the tears help us to flow through the rough patches and keep us moving forward. May we always see the beauty, learn the lessons, and continue to flow through life. From Joshua Davidson. In my line of paid work, city planning, water is sadly as often seen as a problem as it is an asset. In planning, water is something that has to be moved around, situated underground, filtered, responded to during storm events, and ultimately safely brought into our homes for drinking, bathing, cooking, and more. So much of what planners do with water is to try to structure its very fluidity into something manageable and usable in our industrial, advanced economic society. The benefits of this project cannot be understated. Running water and proper plumbing has led to radical decreases in disease and enormous increase in ease of access to this essential good. Amazingly to much of the everyday eye, this system appears to happen invisibly and seamlessly. We turn on the tap, turn off the shower, and the water starts or stops in response. And yet all around us, we see where water's essential character, overflowing, fluid, boundary escaping, comes through, reminding us that no matter how much we plan, nature is still there. The movement of water is not invisible, but it can be starkly plain before our eyes. One of these examples can be seen close to my home in West Philadelphia, in the Mill Creek watershed. More than a century ago, Mill Creek was sewered, brought underground, as part of the residential and industrial development of West Philadelphia. When the planning for this project was underway, the impetus was rapid development, not long-range stability. Sure enough, the landscape above the Seward Creek is some of the most volatile land in the neighborhood. In the summer of 2019, the intersection at 43rd and Baltimore developed a massive sinkhole right above the creek. And as the decades-long work Anhorst and Sprint has conducted in the neighborhood shows, houses built on top of the creek are a lot more likely to experience structural deficiencies and faulty foundations, unstable footing, because the land itself was really water. What these examples, water in sewers that let us live our lives, and water's overflowing sewers that cause major infrastructural and social concern, bring forth is our essential dependence on water. In this moment in the Seder, we can reflect on the sanctity of water and the way it purifies our spirits at this moment of our collective redemptions. And we can also reflect on our need to live in relation to water, to be grateful when it helps us, and to respond to its fluidity rather than seeking to overpower it. This response, to ride the wave of water, is also part of the Exodus. Motzi, matzah. Bless, then break and eat matzah. Illustration below, matzah baked by Susan Weiss. From Ateneo Rosado. This prayer is inspired by the blessing of Homotzi and the United Farm Workers labor organizing efforts. The original English version. Praised be the hands of the farm workers who bring bread from out the earth. Praised be the lives of those who do backbreaking work in the fields under the sun, from the San Gabriel Valley to the wheat belt to Lancaster. Praised be the lives of those who are made to use insecticides and pesticides without ever being able to read the warning label. Always, always praise the lives of those who are forced to work with the chemicals that kill la tierra y su vida. Praised be the children of those who bring bread to our tables. May we join with them to make life beautiful for all. This bread is an extension of them, and they are an extension of God. This bread contains their work, and their work contains God's. Translation into Spanish. Alabadas sean las manos de los campesinos que traen pan de la tierra. Alabada sea la vida de quienes tienen un trabajo agotador en los campos bajo el sol, desde el Valle de San Gabriel hasta el Valle de Trigo y Lancaster. Alabada sea la vida de quienes están obligados a usar insecticidas y pesticidas sin poder leer las etiquetas de advertencia. Sean siempre alabadas las vidas de quienes son obligados a trabajar con sustancias que matan la tierra y su vida. Alabados sean los niños de los que traen pan a nuestras mesas, que podamos acompañarles en la construcción de buen vivir para todos. Este pan es una extensión de ellos y ellos son una extensión de Dios. Este pan contiene su trabajo y su trabajo contiene el trabajo de Dios. Maror, from Marilyn Crout. When we are young, we can be held captive by the expectations that family, friends, community, and culture place on us. We might comply to avoid punishment or gain accolades. We might rebel. We might get stuck somewhere in between. We might not even realize it. Regardless, acting on these expectations will offer hollow rewards, bitter results, because they will not be based on who we truly are or can strive to be. With courage, we can look into our souls, throw off the ties that bind us to others' expectations, and find a path toward freedom to be our true selves. Artwork below by Rabbi Beck Richman. From Rabbi Judd Levingston. Morals of Maror. The wise child eats the maror dutifully following the instructions. The wicked child tricks a sibling into thinking that the maror is a baby carrot. The simple child cannot tell the difference between the maror and a baby carrot. The child who doesn't know how to ask a question thinks the maror is a mistake. Written around 200 CE, the Mishnah, an early code of Jewish law, teaches that several species can be served as maror: lettuce, chervil, field laryngo, endives, and horseradish. The bitter herbs have to be served fresh or dry, and they cannot be boiled or pickled. That means that the horseradish that we buy in jars can't masquerade as a bitter herb. We are obligated to eat the bitter herb raw and unadulterated in as pure a state as possible, because only that allows us to develop both empathy and kindness. Empathy from tasting the raw bitterness of slavery, and kindness because we become vulnerable and in need of relief from the bitterness. The rabbis in the Gemara, the commentary on the Mishnah, love to play with words, and they teach in Talmud, Pesachim 39a, that lettuce, chasa in Hebrew, can be served as a bitter herb because of the symbolism of that word. God showed mercy, chas in Hebrew, and redeemed us from slavery. Each of us has an opportunity in this brief stage of our Seder to feel bitterness, empathy, relief, and anticipation for that moment when bitterness will subside and be replaced with sweetness. Eating maror is a deeply moral act of empathy, not the same at all as eating a baby carrot. Korech. Eat a sandwich of matzah, bitter herbs, and cheroset. From Rabbi Reba Carmel. Mizmor Lemikdash Hillel. I sing to you a song of gratitude and praise, to you who place slavery and freedom in the palm of our hands, to you who ask us to remember that liberation is tinged with pain, that bitterness will yield as freedom, and that sweetness binds them together. I pray to you that we merit to gain entry to your Mikdash, your sanctuary of divine Torah, where those who are enslaved witness freedom, and those who are liberated have compassion, and all are bound together by the intoxicating sweetness that courses through the soul of humanity. Amen. From Donetta Alisa Purnell. It's all about the cheroset. My first Seder was sponsored by a family at the synagogue I was attending when I converted. When we arrived at the portion of the Seder at which time we consumed the cheroset, I made a comment to those around me, referencing how I was feeling guilty because I wasn't sure that I had consumed enough bitters, and therefore that I had not suffered enough. A woman seated across from me replied something to the effect of, "Look at that, you've already got the Jewish guilt." I have come to realize that the bitter does indeed serve a purpose. This concept has been articulated in many ways. Those who practice the law of attraction, as articulated by Esther Hicks, come to recognize that step 5 of the manifestation process is the ability to recognize that step 1, the contrast, as she refers to it, provides the opportunity for expansion. That is because there is recognition of what one does not want, which uncovers the opportunity to create and manifest the alternate and opposing ideal. Those in recovery communities have a saying that, quote, "Pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress," unquote. After attending a Woman in Power conference at the Omega Institute, I once did a lay-led sermon in the Unitarian Universalist Church on the topic of turning pain into power. It was a reflection on how strong women have used negative situations to empower themselves and to assist others in doing the same. I believe that the most famously verbalized of this concept is, of course, turning lemons into lemonade. I have found that in order to find purpose and meaning in the bitter, I must embrace, enhance, and dwell in the sweet. The more it is nurtured, the more it grows. So I commit to acknowledging the place and existence of the sometimes painful bitterness metaphorically addressed by the Maror, so that I may further nature, appreciate, and expand the sweetness represented in the cheroset. Shulchan Orech. Begin the full meal. From Rabbi Nancy Epstein. Eating the meal is central to the Seder. It unites the first part of the Seder, which looks to our historical past, with the last part that envisions our messianic future. It elevates the meaning inherent in the words of Pirkei Avot 3:4. When three eat at the same table and have spoken words of Torah, it's as if they had eaten at God's table. During our Seder meal, we may enjoy great nourishment and delight, and may we give thanks for all the hands that produced, delivered, and cooked our food and set our Seder table and reaffirm the human right to food and freedom for all. From Susan Weiss. I used to sit at the children's table, a place of playful Seder mischief with siblings and cousins, catching "behave yourselves" glances from the adults up ahead. Teen years moved me to the center of the seating. I was too young and restless to pay much attention, but did my part as requested. As a young mother with children, I was back to the children's table to mind the baby and leave if required by infant demands. Religious study, insight, and maturity brought me to the head of the table with my parents seated next to me as participants. I led the Seder, keeping some of the old traditions, but adding and updating the content. Grandchildren and young cousins took their places at the children's table. My children and their spouses, seated alongside, made up the middle. Each generation taking their seat in a glorious transition of family, tradition, and love. Around the table we turn. Safun. Search for, find, and then eat the afikomen. From Rabbi Cynthia Kravitz. Growing up next door to my Aunt Claire and Uncle Jack, of blessed memory, was a beautiful gift. We shared every holiday together. Uncle Jack's custom for negotiating for the afikomen was to hold his deliberations with the all of us at the Seder table after the meal. One payment was a delicious box of almond bark. The second payment was one much deeper, affecting me to this very day. Each of us would share a social justice cause that we were involved with during the year, describing what the organization did and why we were committed to this cause. Uncle Jack and all the family listened to each of us, and then, in the name of our family Seder, Uncle Jack made a contribution to each of the causes that we had shared. This custom has stayed with me, and at every Seder, my family continues this beautiful tradition. Our Seder was kept relevant and true to the special Passover mitzvah of feeling the pain of others and helping others. And every Pesach, our family learned more about who we were, what we believed in, and who we were becoming. This yearly Pesach Seder table discussion was a great way for our family to learn about and keep up to date with the youngsters at the table. The adults had a great opportunity to shep nachas in seeing that we had internalized the central teaching of the holiday and what they had taught us. From this family ritual, we lifted up the power of the unknown. We made a difference in this world in ways that even we ourselves could never imagine or know. We explored hiddenness. We revealed new things about ourselves to our family. And we played. It was fun to share. Thank you forever, dear Uncle Jack. Thank you for teaching me that observing Pesach is not complete without the action of stretching out our arms to help others. Facing Page artwork by Yuri Clark. Barech. Pour the third cup of wine and recite the blessing after meals. Pour an extra cup of wine for the prophet Elijah and open the door of the house to invite in Elijah. From Mordechai Martin. It's a very special moment when we open the door and summon Elijah the prophet to attend our Seder. In some ways, it is the ultimate act of faith and trust in Judaism. Just as we are sure that the Messiah is coming, right this very second, they'll be here tomorrow, the latest, Kinahur. So too, we believe with childlike simplicity that Elijah, the Messiah's foreteller, is just behind that door. Open it and greet him. In my house, this was often my responsibility, as my older sister Julia, who normally would have hogged such a special duty, had been permanently terrified out of it by Jane Yolen's The Devil's Arithmetic, which depicts a skeptical young modern American Jewish girl being magically transported to Nazi Germany when she opens the door for Elijah. And indeed, there is something terrifying about this moment. It is when we recite the fearsome prayer, Shefach Chametecha, pour out your wrath, and wish a swift and vicious end to all those who would and have attacked the Jews. Who are these four nations traditionally identified with Rome, Persia, Greece, and Babylon? And what did they do to deserve such a fate? For the rabbinical tradition, they are those who deny the greatness of God. And this is what terrifies me. For don't I also, on occasion, bring into doubt the greatness of the Lord? In fact, with my sister's refusal and Jane Yolen's prose echoing in my ears, aren't I already thinking that most common of contemporary Jewish heresies? Where was God when we needed God in our suffering, In a way, the 17th century Polish rabbi, Naftali Ginsburg, points out that we are not alone. The prophets Jeremiah and Daniel, he says, also revoked God of the title of Hagibor, the Mighty One, and of Hanora, the Awesome One, when they saw the suffering of the people Israel. What's more, says Rabbi Ginsburg, they were right to do so, because our God is a God of truth. So remember, when you have trouble with the theology of pour out your wrath, speak up, be honest, for ours is a God of truth. From Howard Spodek. Jews in different parts of the world have different customs and emphasize different parts of our shared history. For the B'nai Israel Jewish community in India, they treat Elijah, for them, he is Eliyahu Hanabi, pronounced with a B, with special veneration. They believe that when their community left Israel, they imagine after the destruction of the first temple, they shipwrecked off the west coast of India. The B'nai Israel community holds that Eliyahu Hanabi rescued them and brought them safely to India. As a result, pictures of Eliyahu in his chariot are everywhere in B'nai Israel homes and synagogues, often with prayers. The B'nai Israel also believe that when Eliyahu went to heaven, the wheels of his chariot touched down in Alibag, about 15 miles south of Mumbai. When we open the door for Eliyahu Hanabi, we are reminded of our relationship to Jews all around the world, of Eliyahu's profound impact on so many Jewish communities, and of the beauty of Jewish diversity worldwide. From Penina Hoffnung, The Ballad of Serach Bat Asher, a Patish, New Words by Penina Hoffnung, written in 5778. To the tune of I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill, poem by Alfred Hayes, tune by Earl Holly Robinson of blessed memory, both. Serach Bat Asher, according to Midrashic tradition, was granted eternal life for telling her grandfather Jacob about his son Joseph still being alive and dwelling in Egypt in so gentle a manner that Yaakov did not die from the shock of revelation. She is counted among those who went down into Egypt with Yaakov, and again when they left Egypt. It's said that she helped locate Joseph's bones immersed and buried in the Nile so that they could be repatriated to the promised land as Joseph had requested. Like Elijah, she is said to wander the earth helping the Jewish people when they need it in quietly modest but crucial ways. I thought of the Ballad of Joe Hill because of the commonality of a hero who never dies, and the fitting gentleness of the tune. I like to think that Hayes, who was Jewish, and Robinson would be glad for inclusion in the Seder, and that they would be 100% behind the Me Too and Time's Up protest movements. Before you open up that door for Eliyahu Navi, come learn of Serach Bat Asher, erased from history, erased from history. She was Yaakov's granddaughter, and he still grieved Yosef's loss. From Egypt came some happy news, but how to tell the boss? But how to tell the boss? So Serach took up her guitar and sat at granddad's side, crooning gently into his ear, "My Uncle Joe's alive. My Uncle Joe's alive." When Jacob realized what she'd said and why through lullaby, said he, "She saved me from sure death. This child will never die. This child will never die." And so to Egypt she did go, and with a tribe descend. And 400 years after that, she left with them again. She left with them again. The Midrash is filled with details in every age and stage. Whene'er Jews needed gentle help, Serach was wise and sage. Serach was wise and sage. So not just to Elijah should we raise our glass aloft. Our world requires heroes whose actions are more soft, whose actions are more soft. Particularly at this time, when the call is for Time's Up, to unsung Serach Bat Asher, we dedicate this cup. We dedicate this cup. So tell her story to the world, declare it everywhere. The love, wisdom, and bravery of Sarah felt her share, of Sarah bought her share. Pour the fourth cup of wine, and then recite Psalms of Praise, Hallel. From Mark Smith. As soon as I hear a familiar tune from Hallel, I want to sing. When I hear Beseet Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim, I want to sing. To sing the Hallel Psalms, Psalms 113 through 118, is not only to enjoy singing together, but to sing with a purpose, the very purpose captured by the word Hallel, literally to praise. In Hallel, for what are we praising God? Many of the themes of Hallel apply all three of the Shalosh Regalim. Gratitude to the God who is in heaven, Psalms 113, 115, 16. Praise focused on the divine name, Psalms 113, 115, 116, 118. And the nations ultimately under God in the wider scheme of things, Psalms 113, 115, 117, 118. And the emphasis on God's care for those who have less will resonate for us, Psalms 113, 115, 116. Yet two Psalms in Hallel focus specifically on the Passover experience, the Exodus from Egypt in Psalm 114, in Betzer Yisrael Mimitzrayim, and in Psalm 118, we end our Hallel experience with echoes of Shir Hayam, the Song of the Sea, in Exodus 15. The Lord is my strength and might. He has become my deliverance. In Psalm 118, which is equal to Exodus 15, and your right hand is triumphant. Psalm 118 and 16, like Exodus 15. When we sing Hallel, we can praise God for many things. Not the least is that we have life in us to perform our own departure from Egypt with God. From Maria Polzetti. This verse in the Song of Songs has been interpreted as a description of the crossing of the sea. Oh, my dove in the crevice of the rock, in the covert of the cliff, let me see you, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and you are beautiful. Song of Songs 2:14. The ancient Aramaic translation on this verse expounds on it. And when wicked Pharaoh pursued the people of Israel, the assembly of Israel was compared to a dove trapped in the clefts of a rock. Then immediately the assembly opened her mouth in prayer before Hashem, and an echo came from the heaven above. And this is what it said. You, O assembly of Israel, show me your face and your worthy deeds, and let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet when it prays in the small temple, and your voice is beautiful when you perform good deeds. Aramaic Targum to the Song of Songs, 2:14. Usually, when we think about the crossing of the sea, all of the agency is with God performing miracles and with Moses leading the people. This reading celebrates another aspect of it, the people's ability to rejoice in God's gifts and the people's good deeds. There is beauty in the people's acknowledgement of God, the praise they utter by singing and by praying together. And there is beauty in the people's good deeds, whether those deeds are taking the scary and confusing steps of the early days of the Exodus, or whether the deeds are the love and care that people show for each other in sustaining a community through trauma. In this moment at the sea, in the moment that the people seem trapped but manage to release, God responds to the sweetness and beauty of both, the voice and the face, the singing and the doing. As we go into Hallel, as we raise our voices in praise, we can imagine an echo coming from heaven, responding in love to the beauty of people raising their voices together in praise of God, and responding to the good deeds that we have seen so much in the past year, the love and care and connection that people have shown in holding families and communities together through this difficult time. Nirtza, conclude with a song. From Ken Landy. In our house, the reading of the Haggadah involves a protracted discussion of the plagues. Why were there 10? The first 9 plagues impacted everyone in Egypt equally, but the 10th plague was different. There is no recovery from the death of a child, and the 10th plague affected only the Egyptians, not the Israelites. The Egyptians were furious. Egyptian mobs roamed the streets looking for Israelites they could maim or kill. Each Israelite house was marked in red, making that easy. There was nothing left for the Israelites but to flee, and to do so quickly. This 3,000-year-old story applies to us today. The pogroms in Eastern Europe in the late 19th and early 20th century, the destruction of synagogues and Jewish schools and institutions on Kristallnacht, and the recent attack on the United States Capitol by furious mobs are reminders that the recital of the Passover story at the Seder is as much about us today as about our ancestors. For my family and me, this is very real. I saw the remnants of my school the morning after Kristallnacht and hid from the Nazi mobs roaming the streets that day. The smears of blood on the doorposts were replaced by yellow stars of David. The Seder in our house combines the retelling of a 3,000-year-old story with a contemporary one, one that is new and still unfolding. It begins with the youngest ones in the family asking what will happen this evening, and ends with the refrain, next year in Jerusalem. The ending was there long before there was a state of Israel and a realistic possibility of actually going to Jerusalem. What it really said was, during the coming year, may you, our youngest, achieve your dreams and aspirations. In our family, the youngest generation, teenagers, runs the second half of the service. It is our way of transferring the mantle to them, and they are anxious to take it on. Each family has its own combination of stories, blending together the experiences, hopes, and visions of multiple generations. It is the uniqueness of these family experiences, dreams, and aspirations that makes each Seder unique and personal. From Mark Pinsky, the end of every journey, through the wilderness, through the diaspora, through a global pandemic, through political times bad and good, through this Seder is the start of a new one. We have learned and experienced so much on our way. What do we hope for now? Hope, Rabbi Avi Strasberg cautions, can be dangerous. Pessimists suffer the emptiness of low expectations, while optimists feel the hurt of broken hearts. Hope must root in the hard ground of reality and still reach outward and upward with faith. Tonight, as we conclude our Seder, we dream that the world as it is will become the world as it should be. And we hope that we will help to make it so. We hope that we will help to make it so. Sefirat HaOmer. On the second night, begin counting the Omer with the blessing. From Mark Smith. As one of our last acts together at the Seder, we count the Omer. But what does it mean to count time? We may consider this question in light of the only place in the Bible where we find counting time. That's in Psalm 90, 12. In this verse, the Kahal asks God, teach us to count our days rightly. To count time is something we do together. It is not simply an individual act. It is also an act for us to take stock of the span of our life, as this psalm says earlier in verse 10. But what is the goal? The full verse 12 says, teach us to count our days rightly, that we may obtain a wise heart. In this act, we begin again. Let's embrace the invitation to take in time. Let's take in each day and pause in the hope of obtaining wise hearts. Artwork below by Penina Hoffman. from Betsy Teutsch. Moving from Mitzrayim, the narrow place, Egypt specifically, but more broadly understood to be any place of constriction, to a place of merchavia, expansiveness, is the central experience of liberation. Beloved Hallel, Psalm 118, expresses this exuberantly. Min hametzar karatiya, anani b'mechavya. From the narrow straits, I called to God, and God answered me with expansiveness. The journey from Mitzrayim to Mechavya, narrow straits to expansiveness, is reflected in counting the Omer, commencing the second night of Passover, and continuing until we reach night 49, opening to Shavuot and the giving of Torah. A group of us, finding ourselves in the narrow restrictions of COVID, decided to count the Omer together by Zoom every evening. This nightly ritual provided connection and companionship in a time of great shock and fear. When our Omer count culminated, our shared journey felt far from over. We decided to continue counting nightly, first to Tisha B'Av, then to Shemini Atzeret. At that point, we realized even though our counting wouldn't have a specific endpoint, we felt called upon to document each night by continuing our count. Our group has learned that even in very deep Mitzrayim, that narrow place, can come surprising and paradoxical merchavya, expansion. One of us, in the extreme quiet of sheltering in place, discovered a passion for writing poetry. Another, long homebound, marvels at how much her social, professional, and Torah study access has expanded and deepened. A countess, as we call ourselves, mourned a parent's death with loving community stretching far beyond pre-COVID's geographic Shiva boundaries. By Pesach 5781, 2021, we will be completing an entire year of counting. We hope at the end of our second Omer cycle, vaccinations will be vanquishing the virus and we can once again experience communal life. How glorious that Merchavya will be. From Ivan Rosenberg. The commandment of counting the Omer gives us a spiritual connection between Pesach and Shavuot. It clarifies in very experiential way the real object of Zaman Hedotenu, the time of our liberation. By counting up with anticipation to the Zaman Matan Torotenu, the time of the giving of our Torah, it emphasizes that at the Exodus we were given not only freedom from, but also freedom to. We need to leave enslavement behind, but that is not enough. To be truly free, we need purpose and meaning in life, which the Torah gives us.